You're listening to the OCD Stories podcast, hosted by me, Stuart Ralph. The OCD Stories is a podcast dedicated to raising awareness and understanding around obsessive compulsive symptoms. I do this through interviewing inspired therapists, psychologists, and people who have experienced OCD. Welcome to the OCD Stories. Welcome to episode 299 of the podcast, and in this one I got back on therapist Justin Hughes. Justin is a licensed professional counsellor in Dallas, Texas, and he specialises in CBT for OCD. And in this, we got him back on to specifically talk about walking faithfully as a Christian while doing OCD treatment and some of the roadblocks and barriers that some Christians face. So specifically, he breaks down what those barriers are when seeking treatment as a Christian. He shares some relevant scripture, why OCD is not a spiritual problem, seeing a therapist regardless of their own faith, the concept of common grace, uncertainty amongst Christians, doing exposure and response prevention therapy without crossing the person's religious and personal values, dealing with the guilt and shame of having had certain intrusive thoughts, speaking with family members who are hesitant, and much more. So I think whether you're a Christian or not, I think a lot of this will apply to other faiths too. And generally, I think there's a lot of good OCD conversation in here, even if you aren't religious in any way. But yeah, it was in parts very philosophical, more of an open discussion, but I enjoyed the conversation and I hope you guys do too. And thank you as always to NoCD for supporting the show and the work that I do. And NoCD now operate in the USA, the UK, Australia and parts of Canada. So if you want to find out more about their therapy services, head to go.treatmyocd.com/TheOCDStories, or click the link in the episode description. Thank you as always to you guys for listening. I deeply appreciate it. And thank you to Justin for his time. And without further ado, here he is. Welcome back to the show, Justin.
Thanks, Stuart.
It's good to have you back on.
It's nice to be.
Yeah. And, you know, today we're going to talk more about Christians and OCD or Christianity and OCD, but specifically looking at sort of OCD treatment for Christians, considerations and common concerns. So, but I think it's worth stating up front, you know, I think a lot of the questions and probably the answers you give will very much, I think, be useful for other religions too and other faiths. Because I think some of the Christian, some of the questions aren't necessarily Christian specific. More religion specific. So on that note, what are some of the key barriers that Christians may face when seeking treatment for OCD?
Yeah. You know, if we talked about this the last time I was on, I think I would have bounced around to any number of things, and I can here today. I've got several thoughts that I'd love to touch base on if we have time, but let me talk about a conversation that I had that encapsulated, I think, the main issue that comes up for Christians when considering OCD treatment. And total credits to Micah Howell. So for those who haven't listened to the OCD stories, he was just on, I think, September 2021. And I actually got to know Micah a little bit through the OCD and Faith Task Force that I'm on with the International OCD Foundation, which, first of all, side note, hopefully in the resources we'll put this out there. They're doing some great work. We're doing some great work, really cool stuff. Had our first conference this year, but really just building that page and trying to have content for everyone. So just want to mention that as a side note. So I got connected with Micah. And when coming back the second time, I thought, okay, let me talk to a few people and get some feedback. Hey, what are the common concerns, and especially sufferers? Like, what have you faced? I hear my clients, but I wanted to talk more personally to folks that I know. And Micah was so sweet to schedule a phone call, and he gave me permission to mention this, and I hope that I'm doing him credit. He so clearly demarcated the line of what I believe is the primary presupposition is what, I mean, he said it, I've got to give him credit. The presupposition that's at the top that will block more Christians from treatment than anything else. And it's basically this: anxiety is a spiritual problem, and thus anxiety needs to have a spiritual solution. I'll just pause with that for a second because it's a big one.
Yeah.
And I'm a wordy fellow. Oh my goodness. So one of my colleagues gave me the Office. I'm sorry, I have to say the American version because I'm working with the Brits here, my mate, Stuart. But the American version, is it better or worse in your?
I mean, the British one is obviously started it all. And it's very British, the humor. So I don't think it maybe resonate in America as well. But I personally love the American Office. Okay. I mean, I've watched it through like four times, all seasons.
Yeah, same here. Yeah. Michael Scott, his wordiness. There was this birthday card that my colleague gave him just going on and on and on. So I tend to do that. I'm getting off on the side. But Micah just shot to the heart. And he had said, everything grows from this presupposition, aka every problem, right, in seeking treatment. The presupposition that anxiety is a spiritual problem with a spiritual solution. And resistance will grow out of that as well if we're misinformed. And to be fair, I don't think that we can just, in a clear-cut way, for those of us that actually see things spiritually and believe that there is a spiritual dimension, world, that we're spiritual beings, I'm also not going to come out and say, oh, there's nothing spiritual too. I think that that could be an equal and opposite error. And I know many listeners, atheists, agnostics, nuns, they will have a very different take on that. But certitude, it's so tempting to try to feel better and to feel certain in for anybody, but we know especially for those who suffer with OCD, those who suffer with anxiety. And so this problem that comes up again and again and again in multifold variable ways, I tend to really think that Micah is spot on. That's the one that will trip up more people than anyone else. I just want to pause because there's a lot that I could say, but I wonder if you...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What comes to my mind, I think it's a very valid point. But I think if we look at it from the other side of religion, which is probably atheism, that you could argue that anxiety is an existential problem. Mm-hmm. So effectively, we're saying the same thing, but it's about life and death and meaning and versus faith and religion. But atheists and more secular people, the community and society at large, don't push that onto people, whereas maybe it's happening in not just the Christian faith but other faiths. So I don't know. I guess I think that the concern is there as well for non-religious, but it just isn't pushed on people, maybe for whatever reason, and maybe because they're not a community in itself versus like Christians. And I don't know. I just share that because I know from existential psychotherapy, they're often look at it. I could be getting it wrong, but anxiety in that way. It's about death. It's about, you know, not being able to admit your own mortality. And then that's where it stems from and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know if that makes sense.
I think it does. Yeah. And I could see how really in any number of faith communities, but especially just speaking from personal experience and since we're addressing the topic of Christians and OCD here today, they're... I think one of the big points that is important to drive home is that if OCD is OCD, and it doesn't necessarily have to involve, it will deal with spiritual issues. It touches on spiritual things. And yes, direction, hope, comfort, et cetera, come from the spiritual foundation, but it's not a spiritual problem per se, is at least my thought process and argument. And part of what I'll comment on that I think supports that is how remarkably similar this looks for people of all backgrounds and faiths. Even scrupulosity, which we're talking about in the OCD and Faith Task Force, which this is going to shock a lot of my fellow Christians, but there's a person who's atheist on the task force, and I'm so glad they're there because they are ultimately representing the various perspectives of many different people, but especially of the community of those that don't believe in God or say there's not enough proof. The reality from what I've seen, at least the experiential side, but then when I see the research and when I talk to clients, OCD is OCD is OCD is OCD. And I've seen scrupulosity in Christians, and I've also seen plenty of other obsessive themes, contamination, et cetera, in Christians. I've also seen scrupulosity in Hindus, in contamination as well, and in atheists and agnostics and so forth. And so it's something where, because of my own background, sometimes it's even hard to emphasize this directly, because I do care so much about spiritual things. And I love Jesus, and I have so much hope because of that. And so it's really interesting. I bump up against that tension where a lot of my own background and a lot of the voices in varying denominations within Christianity are saying things like, nope, you've got to address this spiritually. Nope, your faith is weak. Anxiety is a sin. You've got to pray. You've got to confess. You've got to dot, 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 dot. And so this is why I kind of want to hit it heavy up front, heavy hitter here, with the fact that I think that this seeing OCD, and we're not just talking scrupulosity, we're talking about any subtype of OCD, I'm going to argue and tolerate that uncertainty that it just may not. I don't really believe it is per se, touches on spiritual things. That's where I want to start.
Yeah. I mean, good point. I don't think, as you say, it's a spiritual problem. It's a human problem. You know, I don't want to say even brain problem, because then that medicalizes it, you know?
Yeah.
Not to say that that's not a component. I just don't think that's the all, it's a human problem. And, an OCD doesn't discriminate. As I like to say, it tortures fairly and equally, but I guess, it's not a spiritual problem. We both agree with that. But I guess you could look at it as it's not a spiritual problem, but suffering is in the Bible, and to a point it's inevitable. If I can say that, and Buddhism says the same thing, and so you could see the challenge of OCD as a spiritual opportunity, maybe not problem, of like an opportunity to get closer to God, or kind of like it's your cross to bear, so to speak.
Well, yeah, and so that's actually as I thought about today, I was thinking about the opportunities that those who are Christian have incoming to treatment. And one of the things that is preloaded for those, at least, that have been around for a bit, it's like if somebody's studied the Bible and actually sat under some teaching and so forth, a proper, we would call it a theology of suffering, is one of the great strengths, because it's hogwash to think that we're just going to feel good all the time, or that we should feel good, or if we're in God's will, that we're going to feel good and be okay. The reality is, there's this tension between, if we jump to Proverbs and many different examples, or even Psalms, where blessed is the man. It starts out Psalm 1:1. Blessed is the man, dot, dot, dot. And it goes into many different things. And Proverbs talks extensively about happy is the one who does X. Sermon on the Mount, blessed are those who. And so if we're selective, if we take the sound bites, like our culture is apt to do with any number of things in the news cycle, we can get distracted and forget that, oh, Jesus actually said, in this world, you will have trouble. Wait, what? That doesn't pair with the theology that I like. Hold on. I want a Jesus that is only pure comfort and happiness and is percolating my dopamine receptors. I don't want a God who activates pain receptors, right? And the striking consensus is that suffering, there's much of it we don't understand. Many times God does not give an answer at all, sometimes to a very direct question. But then also moments where it's very clear that God is doing something through it. Well, one of my favorite verses in scripture is 2 Corinthians 1 and the first few verses, 3 or 4. And it is this, it's called a doxology, where it's praising God. So blessed be, and dot, dot, dot. It's kind of an extensive phrase, but it jumps into blessed be the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our affliction, so that we may be able to comfort those in any affliction. And it's not like, oh yeah, you'll get to the spot where you don't have any affliction, but it's that weird mystery. I'm going to talk about that later too. Mystery, uncertainty, right? That I can't answer it exactly. I don't know exactly how and why. I see it in my own life. I see it in the life of those that I work with, but how that suffering, going through it, can actually lead to growth and betterment.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So yeah, suffering isn't a death sentence. It's a, I don't know, like you say, it's an opportunity for growth. It's painful. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be pleasant, but on the other side is something better. And something you said about often God doesn't give an answer. Okay. And what came to me was well, he's leaving you in uncertainty. And that is ultimately the antidote to OCD.
Yeah.
If you stay in that place and not seek the answer,
you'll
kind of get it. But yeah, that's not what we're trying. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think a lot of times extraordinarily well-intending pastors, clergy, people in the church, will attempt to offer comfort and direction, but as those of us in the OCD community know too well, either through personal suffering or in the clinical or both sides or seeing a loved one suffer, that it doesn't work that way. And so one of the biggest things that personally I'm on a mission to address, I guess, confront, but in a loving way, is when I do hear people say just simply like, you need to pray about that, right? And it's done in an invalidating and minimizing way, not in the sense of, oh my goodness, that's so hard, I'm sorry, I don't have the answer, let's pray together right now, kind of seek that out. But it's the opposite, more like that pejorative, or that, well, you've got problems, your faith is weak, clearly, so you need to do the discipline. So I'm on this mission to really help, hopefully, folks to understand, but there will always be those who don't, and really to reach out to those who suffer and who are ready to jump on board to say, okay, you know what, maybe it's not a faith thing. And quite the stark reality is the fact that that became so obvious to me when I first started to work with OCD, that when I'd actually hear the examples and the stories of sufferers, they showed me up. They put to shame many of those in the clergy as far as their focus and dedication and just their heart. And so it's what keeps me in the game, so to speak, working with OCD as a person who doesn't have it myself. I understand it and get it, I think, in a lot of ways, but keeps me in the game is the sufferers of OCD, because they're just the most amazing people in the world. So if I can help on this mission to, break down barriers to get clients, not just into therapy, but sometimes it's just the community at large. There are some excellent non-clinician led support groups on scrupulosity, for example, that are going on and all sorts of things. And so if we can break down those barriers, I think that's just a wonderful, beautiful thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess from the clergy, but also I think just anyone of faith, almost like it doesn't have to be one or the other, in terms of like, it doesn't have to be treatment versus do your prayers, read this scripture. Can't it be both, you know? And that's how it should be viewed. Of, it's not us or them, it's us and them. And
yeah,
the more you throw at the wall, something's going to stick.
And so absolutely. And I think where a lot of folks struggle with this, and especially in the evangelical Christian and Catholic community as well, working with clients, it's something that within Christianity, many times back to that presupposition, right? If there's something that needs to be addressed spiritually, it's almost seen as this wrong or this sin or this, at a minimum, this like lesser thing, like, okay, because we look at sometimes the secular therapy world and say, no, and Micah talked about that in his talk as well. And so I think for a lot of people, they just need to hear a story from a Christian or a clinician who walks with Christians as well, who is Christian, to be like, okay, cool, nice. That's all I need to know. But then there are those two that are going to listen to this, and those that I come across, that there are, it's not just that initial presupposition, but it's had so many different tentacles in their life. They're hearing it from leadership. They're hearing it from their church. They're hearing it from their own brains to say, this is bad. No. Like you can't do this therapy thing because that's violating your faith. They're going to lead you down a terrible road. And so it's, I think, especially in the evangelical community, that is a big issue. Big issue.
Yeah. Good point. And I think I said this on Micah's episode to him, that it's like, I don't know, maybe I'm simplifying it too much, but the way I look at God in the Christian sense, but in my own view of whatever God is, if God, he, she, whoever created everything and everyone, then he created every single therapist or every single human that would become a therapist, a psychologist, or so whether they believe in Jesus or not, they're doing God's work, you know, they're just not calling it that. And I think as a Christian, that's how I would look at it. I think for me, I'm speaking me personally, if I would, that's how I believe I would look at it anyway. Maybe I wouldn't.
Yeah.
And like, they're not out to get me, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yep. Ultimately, they care and they want to help. And that's God's work.
Yeah. Yeah. And for a lot of folks, that will connect for sure. So I think for those that it doesn't, a lot of times it's going to come back to if I believe in things like, the inspiration of scriptures, and where it says that all scripture is God breathed and useful for correction, teaching, and it's useful for everything that we need for life and godliness. By the way, there's, you know, kind of one of those everything words that OCD wants to latch onto, right? In all circumstances, pray. OCD will latch onto that as well. Like, what? I need to be praying 24/7. So it's no surprise, of course, that If you're a Christian and you suffer with OCD, it's probably going to latch onto something like that. But the Christians who really struggle with that is like, yeah, but I, if this is somehow supposed to be fixed through Christ, I can't do it any other way. And so they really don't see it as, you know what, Stuart is a sweet dude. He is, and you are, you're awesome. Like, I would totally seek you out myself. But they're not going to see it as, okay, this guy's going to help me with the OCD.
But I think, I really want to challenge these people in a caring way. And thus I'll be challenging you instead, because I can't speak to them. But as you've just said, kind of, this will be fixed through Jesus. So what came to my mind, and again, I'm simplifying things, but that's just the way my brain works, of, is it analogy or metaphor? I don't know. Anyway, or fable. You must have heard it of, like, was it this woman was, I can't remember, she was drowning. She's in the sea and she called to God, please save me. God sent a boat. And she said, no to the boat, God's coming for me. You know, and she prayed again, God, come help me. There was a helicopter and said, no, go away, helicopter. I need, you know, and some other vessel came, and then she drowned. And then when she met God, she said, why didn't you save me? And he said, well, I sent you a boat, a helicopter, and this other vessel. I guess that's what comes to my mind when you said this will all be done through Jesus. Maybe it is being done, and he sent Stuart Ralph, the non-Christian therapist.
Well, so interesting that you would say that, because there's some awesome support for that. So one of the things that I wanted to talk about is the concept of common grace. So are you familiar with common grace?
No.
What that is. Okay, yeah, gotcha. So, and I mean, I'm speaking to a broad audience. So common grace from really goes back to Jesus' comments that the rain falls on the just and the unjust. And there's other places throughout scriptures that kind of build up the perspective. But the whole thought is that I don't have to be a Christian to be an awesome farmer with crops. Growing up in a conservative household, like we held to a lot of views that I thought were like exclusively Christian. So it's just, oh man, well, I guess it's only the good marriages are Christian. And then as I got older, I'm like, oh, that's not the case. Sometimes the best marriages that I had seen, at least from certain markers, it's like, oh man, yeah, okay, this isn't exclusive, right? So from a Christian theological standpoint, it's saying, okay, like that it's not one of those exclusive things. There are truly some things that really apply to all people. I was thinking about this in a number of ways, but I actually got to recently this year meet an author. He just launched a book. Actually, it's a number one bestseller right now in OCD and anxiety, called Finding Rest. John Seidel is his name. And he highlights his struggles and his suffering and in his thought process through it all. And even though I don't think that he did exposure and response prevention, there are some really key things that he puts in there. And one is really just addressing this concept of common grace. So Paul, basically a mentor to this kid, basically probably a teenager, young adult, who's doing ministry with Paul in the Bible. There's a couple of letters that we have in number of references throughout the New Testament of Paul speaking to Timothy. And at one point, it's clear from the inference of the passage that he's been having some stomach issues. And Paul says, take a little wine for your stomach. First of all, my very conservative friends don't like that word wine. I'm teasing, kind of, but kind of not. but moving past that, it's really interesting. Like, wouldn't we expect him to say, well, you know, you should pray about that? Because we certainly believe that God can remove that. And it's not that you wouldn't pray about that. Or pray that, man, maybe as I feel crummy, may I think of people who feel way worse than me today? may I be of service to them? Make that a prayer. Sure. Wonderful. Good. That's part of, but it's such a clear example of common grace. And I understand that when we're talking about therapy and all of its nuances, a lot of people struggle with all the ins and the outs and so forth of this and that. And there's a lot of fears that Christians have, like, oh my goodness, they are going to, the pop phrase right now going around is deconvert. They're going to deconvert me or whatever. They're going to try to fill in the blank. And then medication. Actually, I come across a lot of Christians who are more okay with medication than they are with therapy, interestingly enough. Whereas most of the time, most people who come into the office as a whole, I think, have a harder time accepting the role of medication. But on the spiritual side, I think a lot of people can kind of wrap their head around, okay, fine, chemical substance. I guess I take Tylenol or Advil if I've got a headache, so I guess I could do this. But a lot of times there's this, nope. Exposures, hierarchy. Wait, what? You're saying if I have this type of thought, I'm going to write this down on paper and then just look at it? Or I'm going to have a thought that's uncomfortable towards another person, of harming them, et cetera. And I'm going to smile and look at that person. I actually try to move closer to them. I'm going to fill in the blank, whatever the examples are. There's a really hard time to understand that. And so I think that that concept of common grace can really help a lot of people to know that, hey, you know what? It doesn't have to be this. A little bit of my frustration is why do we second guess this when we don't second guess parenting strategies, right? Or nutrition or exercise routines. Like I don't know of the Christian Peloton. It may exist. I just did one earlier and I love Peloton. It's awesome. But at some point, I get it. There's a lot of underlying and interconnected details that I've heard over many, many years and thought through, and I understand the complexities, but just keeping it simple, at least for today. If we think that not only is OCD specifically a spiritual problem, and it must be dealt with exclusively spiritually, okay, that sets us up in one way, or maybe not exclusively, but mostly spiritually, we're going to automatically not be open at all. And unfortunately, many, many people come through metaphorically bruised, broken, battle wounded into the office because they've tried everything else. So one of the biggest reasons I'm passionate is let's cut down that time, the average time of 14 to 17 years of onset to getting into treatment. Yeah. Let's cut it down. Let's cut it down and get to business.
Yeah, exactly. And get to business so you can get back to your faith.
You know, bingo. Bingo. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Don't waste any more time. But the common grace thing, I like that. I think I don't want to second guess Jesus, but the advice of drinking wine for a stomach pain, I mean, I'm probably would help because it would numb it because alcohol is that type of thing. But I don't want to critique him too much. I'm sure he knew what he was doing, but where was I going with that? I think the other thing that came to me, and this could be me reading into it, but my interpretation of that is him saying, me and God are busy. We don't have time to be doing miracles for something that could be solved through a thing that exists on planet Earth right now. Mm-hmm. Almost don't waste our time because we need to save the miracles for something much bigger. And it's kind of like, again, you know, I'm speaking as Jesus, I'm there for you, but we don't need to do a miracle for your OCD. You just need to go see these people called therapists who know these various therapies like ERP. You know, it's like, you don't need a miracle. You need a therapist. It's that simple. You need wine. It's like, you know.
Sometimes the therapist is the miracle. The wine. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if that will sit wrong with people or right, but I kind of wanted to share that of like, we don't always need to look for spiritual intervention or a miracle because the answer's already here. It's and probably put here by God is the way to look at it if you are Christian.
To be enjoyed. And so to point people back to their faith. And so I think it's super important for people to hear someone such as myself to say that I am 100% interested in a person finding freedom. And as is a lot of us as probably all of us as clinicians know, we get to see the junk lifted out of the path so that the person can truly put their attention on the things that they care about or develop that further. Sometimes they have to learn, like, okay, what is it that I'm even about? Because OCD is determined and taken so much, and people get really scared, of course, of that too. Yeah. But I've worked with pastors, ministers, leaders in the church, and it's just so incredible to see how once we simplify it and bring it down to, okay, you know what, there's some simple processes here. It doesn't always end in the straightest line for some. I understand that there's ups and downs. We're not selling snake oil here, but most of the time, for most people, the research tells us, most of the time for most people who do something like ERP, and even to a slightly lesser extent with medication, that it helps and it begins to change the control that the OCD has over a person's life. And so now when I think of those clients that are working in ministry, pastoring, et cetera, it's just so beautiful. And I get to see that so clearly. I kind of get to see that every day, not those examples, but different elements of that every single day. So I want people to know that not only is that possible, and that's not just accidental, that's the core. We get rid of the way that OCD is bossing people around and pairing them. And they start to experience freedom so that they can live their lives in the way that any other non-OCD sufferer would.
Yeah.
And sometimes better.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And I think it's worth acknowledging, you know, there is the risk that you may meet a therapist, a secular therapist or a non-Christian therapist that is unethical and may try to de-cather or whatever the term is, you know?
Yes.
But the chances of course. Of finding that person, you would be very, very unlucky. And I want to add a few more varies into that before the word unlucky. Mm-hmm. So I guess I want to acknowledge that to keep people in the uncertainty because we're dealing with OCD here.
Mm-hmm.
But
I see what you did there.
But it just acknowledged it. It's ridiculously unlikely.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, even if in their private life they thought Christianity was a load of rubbish, if they're professional and ethical, they would never ever say anything that would make you think that they think that.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Because you're bound to meet many atheists and other religious therapists and that, but they would never ever. They treat you as a human, and that's what they care about. If they're good therapists.
Yeah. It's just like, I think it's not unlike going to a medical doctor as well, that there are certain guidelines and requirements and ethics that go into that. And so by and large, let's stop making the rare exclusion the rule for that. And Ted Witzig, who writes and speaks and teaches. He's done a bunch of presentations for the International OCD Foundation. And he's actually, he's bivocational as a psychologist and a pastor, which is so cool. He's out of Illinois. And he says, because the symptoms, so back to the original presupposition, because the symptoms of scrupulosity involve spiritual concerns, it is often mistaken for a spiritual problem. And he talks actually in one of his articles that's really helpful, and I'll send this to a number of folks, that, yeah, sure, just like anyone else, when a Christian is looking for a therapist, one, they might be preloaded with some of those presuppositions that are, I believe, inaccurate. But second of all, they want to get all the things, right? So who of us doesn't want to find a clinician who works for free, or at least takes our insurance, who's local to us, who's specialized, and not only are they Christian, but they've gone to the seminary that we like. I have only come across one other person in all of the U.S. so far. I'm limited as a person, but as you may know, like, I'm really in this realm. I've only met one other person who's pretty stinking similar to me, meaning that he got his graduate degree in counseling at a seminary in the U.S. and specializes in OCD. So at some point, there's a lot of the perfectionism that starts to come up. And many times, the best you can do is find an exposure therapist who is a person that, one, maybe they don't share whether they're a Christian or not, which to many Christians, that's almost like offensive. Like, how could you even do that? But obviously, that's completely appropriate. People argue against my openness with this. But obviously, this is not for everyone. Side note. But I want folks to know that sometimes seeing that therapist who does ERP is sometimes the best route that they can go. You can't have it all, right? As far as, none of us can, we're all limited. But I just want to come out right and say that most of the time, let me make this real personal. If a family member, one of my kids, if my daughter or my son, I realized that they began to show symptoms of OCD and they were diagnosed as OCD, and I'm looking around and it's the choice of just talk therapy or with a Christian. Let me just point it out that way. Or a secular therapist who does ERP. I'm going to do ERP every single day of the week with the secular therapist over the Christian therapist that doesn't know ERP and OCD.
Well, thank you for sharing.
It's a little bit of an exposure for me for anxiety. I feel like I may lose about a quarter of my fan base on that one, but I just want to be straight with that. I just got to be straight.
And I think just to poke the bear a bit more, because I enjoy it and I'm in that mood. And because I care is why I want to poke the bear. But this idea that the verse, I don't know where in the Bible it is, but the line of, "Oh, ye of little faith," and ye of little faith, that you think some non-Christian therapist will deconvert you or shake your faith, sort of how weak is your faith that you think that that's a possibility? And maybe that sounds a bit unfair, but that's kind of how I look at it. If I feel pretty comfortable in who I am and what I believe, I should be able to work with various people, both in my job and professionals, and not worry that they're going to change my mind, because you know, it's that, that's what kind of came to my mind is,
Do you, as you bring that up, do you think that pairs well with the paradigm of understanding OCD through the lens of uncertainty, in the sense that it kind of comes? And I see it that way too. It's kind of interesting. I'm writing, always writing. I love writing. So I have a number of articles always in process, and I'll get one out sometime soon on this. But I think there's this Christian intolerance of uncertainty as well, which ironically is not a biblical thing or a Christian thing or so on and so forth, but it's an uncertainty thing that, well, you know, obviously there's a lot of really direct passages that will say things that you may know, or even the old hymn, "Blessed Assurance, Jesus is mine." But it doesn't say "Blessed Reassurance," by the way. Christians need to be called out on tolerating the uncertainty as well. It doesn't mean we throw our hands up and say, well, I know nothing. But if we really, really, really study and dig in and look at the examples of those who are just walking strongly with God, they're, in fact, at least just on the personal experience side, that's one of the things that's so marked to me, is that I see this incredible tolerance of uncertainty with people that have this awesome faith, this ability to go through terrible, awful things and to say, well, of course I have my questions, but I'm going to trust God in this. And so the Christian intolerance of uncertainty, we all dislike it where it pokes us the most. I don't think there's any human that doesn't like it, probably, if it really pokes them. Even the most adventurous person that likes to change scenery daily, the reality is it's wherever it pokes us. Christians need to really, really look at that and, well, okay, study and learn from some others that this relationship to certainty, it's a fool's errand. And so if we just apply that, one, it can be very subset, of course, to the clinical issues that come up in the treatment of OCD. But from a faith standpoint, that's where I have seen so many clients' faith strengthened, because they began kind of ironically to be taught a lesson about theology through life experience. And many Christians are very, very hesitant towards that, right? That it needs to be only prayer, only scripture. But gosh, you know, let's just actually look at, if we're going to say, oh, okay, well, if we're only looking at scripture, what about the many examples where God spoke in different ways, used other things, different things, used the wine for Timothy's stomach at that point, or any number of things. And so I find that once the junk is lifted out of the way and that person has less impairment and they realize, okay, wow, is my relationship with seeking certainty and demanding, feeling okay and not tolerating that, and not saying no to compulsions, which many times the faith piece really comes in and builds them up in that to be able to say no. That's the beauty, is that I see so many examples in the cases that I get to hear it of, oh my goodness, wow. Like, I got to see that, yeah, I don't really have an answer for this suffering. Classic problem of evil. If God is good and all powerful, why does suffering and evil exist in the world? And I still don't have the answer to that myself. And the clients who come in, I don't think have any more of that answer themselves. Unless if we could say an answer is being able to grasp that by faith and to live that out. And that's the beauty of it, right? When we do the treatment, when we do the things that are indicated, and treatment's not perfect either. It's growing. We're learning, always learning. It's helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I could come back with a million more questions, but I know we're already at almost an hour, which is wonderful, but I've got many more questions to come. Are there any more key roadblocks worth discussing before I kind of go on to some other questions?
Yeah, I think I kind of spoke about this, but just highlighting that specifically wanted to say the question is, my faith weak or worse? Is it a sign of lack of faith to pursue treatment? First of all, if you're asking that, one, you're not alone in asking that. But just to be direct, many times I think it's the sign of faith, right, to do that really hard thing, to take the SSRI or fill in the blank, do the exposure, etc. I think that question, can a Christian be healed of OCD? I think it's a distracting question. So a lot of times Christians think in terms of some of just like healing, right? And that's much more kind of like a, we would call it like faith healing. And sometimes in more charismatic churches, actually John Suttle's book talks about that. He grew up in a tradition with faith healing and the concept that, okay, you know what, boom, you know, the sickness, this ailment should be gone. So can a Christian be healed of OCD? Well, I certainly believe yes, but I see it the same as cancer, right? Like there are those weird, weird cases, right? Where somebody, the cancer cells were present on the biopsy, but then they follow up later and it's gone. And it's wild. Like, is that a miracle? I don't know. Like maybe, like I do believe miracles happen, but it's the wrong question, right? If you want to talk about miracles, then study it, sit down and maybe do a Bible study, a book study, dig into it a little bit more. It's a different topic. Like, it's a distracting question and it keeps people, my opinion is at least running for the certitude, right? And, as I had heard, someone share in the task force, this last week, pursuing people who have certitude oftentimes means that you're going towards extreme opinions. No surprise, right? Because the people who are presenting as totally confident, not wrong, not problematic, well, by nature, if we look at personality pathology, probably are a little bit more narcissistic, etc. And so just from that standpoint, today I wasn't thinking of it in these terms, but as you really, I think, ask such incisive questions, Stuart, and bring these things up, I think it really comes back to this relationship to uncertainty in many ways. So we have to be careful of all those things. Certitude. Oh, can I be healed of OCD? I think it's a certitude question. I don't think that's the question we need to be digging into at this moment in that way. If the question is, okay, I'm suffering with OCD, what the heck do I do next? I'm just passionate about this. So I guess the last thing is okay if I...
Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. Would be, what is the role of Christian faith in OCD treatments? To be a little bit tongue-in-cheek, the same as everything else. to be prayerful, to walk in community, to study scripture, to et cetera, et cetera. And to walk any number of things out by faith is key. Like harsh feedback by Christ recorded in scriptures was only towards those who with vitriol denied Christ, put him down, said this wasn't true, this didn't happen. The Pharisees, the Sadducees, they were the really the religious leadership at the time. And so that's a whole another side note as far as Christ's gentleness. My yoke is easy and my burden is light. Come to me, all you who are burdened. I want to point out that I think I'm getting a little bit on the side rail here, but I think there's so many opportunities. It's the faith has to be lived out in the same way as anything else. And some of the key opportunities that the Christians have is the fact that though this can be seen as a negative thing, that commitment level that's so high that would keep a Christian out of therapy is also a commitment level that's so high that can just launch them into the therapy. Because if a person is absolutely willing to suffer to the greatest extent to say, okay, if God wants me to do this, then I'll do it. Then how cool is that if our focus is inaccurate, if we think that suffering needs to be, well, I should just be on my own and doing this and just somehow just praying and figuring it out myself. Yeah. Well, if they're willing to tolerate that suffering, imagine where they can go. And I get to see this, where they do go when they're doing their exposure work. And when we get to that number six exposure and number seven and number eight, and it's getting hot. They're starting to sweat, but they're like, yep, bring it on. Let's go. Mm. Let's go. There's so much, there are so many great things that, that we can work from, great platforms. And I see a lot of churches, by the way, doing mental health super well. I think in, unfortunately, rage culture, it's like everything's bad, everything sucks, everybody's doing things terribly. Nope. Not true. Mm. So there's a lot of opportunity.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, we are talking about some of the roadblocks and thus problems. But ultimately, yeah, there's a lot of churches that do get it right and people of faith that do get it right. And there were many Christians that listen to this podcast that have had no problem going to see a therapist and not care what their beliefs are,
That's right. Just help me, you know?
Yeah. As simple as that. and that's great. But yeah, I guess we're addressing those that are maybe at that sticking point and just need a gentle, compassionate nudge. But you know, you kind of alluded to it earlier. Am I okay to move on? Actually, are there any more kind of roadblock things you want to?
Well, actually, there is. Is this okay time wise if we just keep rolling?
No, keep going.
Okay, sounds good. You just stop me at any point. Okay, so here's the clinical side of this. First of all, I think a lot of times people think that faith and religion and spirituality in things with OCD, that it's just scrupulosity. And scrupulosity is where we're obviously going to consider those things a little bit more overtly. And we have to deal with those topics. But yeah, like any subtype of OCD, of course, is experienced one by OCD sufferers across the world and of any faith and background. But one consideration from the research and what I work with Christians into is how we uniquely tailor treatments to the individual. So in the OCD Faith Task Force with the ICDF, as we're creating content for the website, we're trying to speak and welcome various folks in from various backgrounds, and to speak in a language that makes sense to say, hey, we're dealing with OCD, we're dealing with OCD, we're dealing with OCD. Here's how you deal with this. OCD is OCD is OCD is OCD, as I mentioned. But here's the thing. OCD is very heterogeneous, meaning that it's most people know, like homogenized milk, homogenous would be very smooth, right? Just one thing. But it's actually kind of like chunky milk, which is a better analogy because OCD just really sucks.
It's harder to swallow.
Hard to swallow. There's a lot of variation, and it's not just a subtype thing. So what I'd like to highlight is the fact that we have some really clear research saying that certain obsessions have more cognitive engagement, more cognitive misappraisal, more maladaptive cognitions. And so specifically, one gentleman on our task force, Jed Siv, Dr. Siv, with several other researchers in 2014 had looked at different domains cognitively in OCD sufferers and discovered that the religious and sexual obsessions that came up in OCD had a lot more cognitive processes going on. And though the research isn't strong enough to have a specific, there's a lot to say about this. We don't have necessarily what I will say, sorry, I'm going through the research in my brain right now. I'm trying to synthesize this. Here's a quote from that study. Whereas sexual obsessions were predicted only by increased beliefs about the importance and control of thoughts, and contamination obsessions were predicted only by inflated responsibility appraisals and threat estimation. Religious obsessions were independently predicted by both of these constructs. So let me break that down. So people who have sexual obsessions will wrestle a lot with the distortion of the importance and control of thoughts. So thought action fusion is a great example. Like, oh my goodness, like I just got the groinal when I was driving past this person. I felt something down there. Oh, so that person believes that it's really important that they absolutely control their thoughts. They can't think of having sex with their wife while they're in church listening to the pastor. Like they just can't. There's something inherently wrong. That's the importance and control of thoughts. And contamination obsessions were predicted by those responsibility appraisals and threat estimations. Like I got to be responsible. This is really bad. This is a threat. But religious obsessions got a double whammy, as I would say, as a guitar player. Religious obsessions had both of those, meaning that the person was getting hit from or does get hit from both sides. And we oftentimes have to do just a little bit more cognitive work. I'm ERP through and through. But the cognitive work is that piece where we look at, oh, well, here's a belief that you're actually holding on to. Most of the beliefs are just trash, right? In OCD, it's like, I know it's not true, ego dystonic. But one of those unique things that we have to do in working with folks in religious, spiritual, faith-based beliefs in OCD is to actually separate out the true belief and sometimes do a little bit of cognitive restructuring with that from what is, of course, just the noise of OCD. So that could be a whole nother thing. And I hope I just didn't bore. I'm sure that was boring to a bunch of people, but that's just one implication of where we need to go with the sensitive treatment towards folks who have religious obsessions.
Yeah, that's useful. That is useful. So kind of following on from that, because where you were just talking about taboo and sexual and violent intrusive thoughts, mm-hmm. I got a couple of questions around that from a faith mm-hmm. perspective. So yeah. The first one was, so if intrusive thoughts involve God, the Bible, you know, for example, blasphemous intrusive thoughts, or even just, you know, violent intrusive thoughts, which of course goes against the values of the Bible, you know, how do you do ERP towards these things without mm-hmm. crossing the person's religious and personal values?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Well, first of all, great question. We're going to assess. So I don't want to just take it for granted, right? If a person says I'm Christian or of any background, a belief system or not, I'm not just gonna be like, oh, you must be this, right? So that's where I'm a therapist, right? I'm sitting down. So we assess it. But yeah, a lot of Christians are afraid. Oh my goodness. I've heard that story where somebody said, oh, hey, you're afraid of all of a sudden becoming demon possessed. Oh, fine. We're going to use a Ouija board in therapy. And here's the reality. There are those cases where a clinician has tried those things, tearing up Bibles, mentally yelling blasphemous thoughts during a worship service, putting pornography on the hierarchy. Maybe it's for various sexual obsessions or sexual orientation, OCD, or fill in the blank. And okay, so with many, many, many Christians, I don't know if it's most, but I'm just going to say, yeah, like right away, it's going to be like, nope, that's one of the reasons why, and just to be clear, as we communicate these things, that's another reason why a lot of Christians are like, yeah, I'd rather just suffer, right? Because I don't want to violate my faith in that. And I just want to be super clear in saying that if a therapist asks someone to violate their faith, that's a clear assessment problem. That's a boundary problem, ethical problem. And or a client wasn't assertive enough to speak up and say, hey, no, I actually really do believe this. Because if, for example, let's say tearing up the Bible, If I were sitting, or just right now, if there was a reason to do this, I could tear a page out of the Bible, no big deal, or tear it up or something. I wouldn't have a problem with that because I see that as paper, right? That the words of God are printed on paper, but like that's me personally. But then a lot of folks, like, and I absolutely respect that. That if they, if that's a consistent belief for them, and here's how we also assess it further. If we ask the client, like, okay, hey, so in your faith community or from a scripture standpoint, so what support do you have for this? If the person's like, oh, that feels awful. It's like, okay, well, tell me more about that. We're going to assess that. Because if it's something where it's like, I've never heard of that, let me try to understand it. But we discover that it's something that is very likely the obsession, then we're going to talk about it and consider, can we put that on your hierarchy? But just to be clear, a person absolutely does not need to do anything that would violate their faith, be blasphemous, be inappropriate morally, they do not have to sin, et cetera. We're going down the wrong path with exposures. So not just from a spiritual standpoint, they may be like, yeah, of course that's the wrong path. But from an exposure standpoint, even for a secular therapist, there's either been an error in assessment or there's been an error in the client actually telling the clinician, like, hey, no, like this is an essential tenet for me or belief.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the therapist should also, regardless of whether it's a religious client or a non-religious client, they should be checking in. Does this, example, the relationship OCD comes to my mind. Yeah. You know, when I work with a client with relationship OCD, I sometimes check on exposures that I think, oh, is this infringing on your relationship values? Because I don't want to do that, and I don't want you to do that.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
And if it does, then we get creative and we find a way around it. I mean, just sticking with the Bible ripping idea, you know, personally, that actually feels uncomfortable for me to even think about.
Interesting.
Doing okay. That, you know, because although, like I say, I was christened, but I'm not a Christian, I still see the book. I would even now, if I were to rip it, I would feel guilty, you know, and that says something. You know, you could get creative as in the exposure of like visually ripping it in your mind, or scripting, talking about having ripped it, you know? Yeah. So there's, again, I'm not encouraging everyone to go imaginary rip Bibles, but it's, you can get creative is what I'm saying.
Exactly. And to be clear, exposure clinically is the systematic confrontation of fearful triggers while reducing and ideally eliminating those fearful responses, or pathological, because it's not always just fear. It's sometimes disgust, sometimes it's sadness, guilt. Guilt, shame. And so it's never to be something where we're actually having a person go against their value. Hit and run OCD, we don't have people accidentally bump somebody in, right? Like, so and this expands to all faith traditions and belief systems. As clinicians, the sensitive, religiously and spiritually sensitive exposures are really, really key. So, and that's a big part of what I'm actually working on writing wise for the task force right now, is speaking to clinicians. Like, how do you do this? You know, ethically, I understand if you don't have a seminary degree, if you're not trained extensively in how do I ethically do these things and respect a person of any belief system, but also ask them a little bit more, and it can be uncomfortable. It's not necessarily that hard. We've been trained pretty extensively in sensitivity towards individuals and multicultural. So there's really a few just key considerations. And the tearing up the Bible, it's so interesting. A lot of people would feel really uncomfortable to hear me say that, but let's just take a simple example, right? Where the obsession comes up because the person was in church, they turned the page too fast, it tore. And then obviously any number of things can stem off of there. They look down, they're like, oh my goodness, it was tearing it with one of the warning passages in Hebrew that talks about losing faith. And this is a sign, and it started to link to all these different things and so forth. And it, back to that reminder of what we're actually doing in exposure, by and large, we just use the content that's already there. I think a lot of Christians need to hear that, that we're not making up a bunch of extra crap. Like, we are using the content that's already there. So if you have certain thoughts that are racing through your brain, okay, that's already there. So you think we could just pause and think it mentally? Could we write that word down on paper? I don't know. And that's where we have to keep assessing, keep talking, and also work with where the person is in the process. Because, and sometimes too, working with that person's faith community, clergy, et cetera. What is the thought on this? What would you tell your congregation? Fill in the blank.
Yeah. Good, really good points. The next question I have was very similar to the last one, but I think this question is valid for anyone with OCD, or many people with OCD. I don't want to say everyone, but in the context of this episode. So, you know, as a Christian, I've had lots of taboo, intrusive thoughts, sexual, violent, blasphemous. How do I process now and deal with the guilt and shame I feel around having had all these things? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, well, in one clarifying question with that, are we saying for a person that that's been part of the intrusive process, or are we saying a person who maybe at one time identified as not believing and may have done those things? So real events, right? OCD or?
No. So I literally just mean a Christian who has sexual, violent, intrusive thoughts. So they're just getting thoughts of maybe ripping Bibles or
processing the shame,
sexualizing Jesus or even being violent to someone else, you know, all things that go against the Bible and the teachings of it. How do you work with clients that just feel deeply ashamed of having had all these intrusive thoughts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, first of all, one of the things that resounds as fairly consistent in the process is a lot of that starts to clear up anyway when a person walks through the treatment process. Back to the heterogeneous nature of OCD, yes, the religious and sexual obsessions also, in my experience, tend to produce a lot more of those shame feelings too. Mm-hmm. I don't know of many clients with contamination themes or just right themes and flipping light switches that shame can be a huge thing, like, oh, where OCD has blocked my goals and kept me from living life and so forth. But as far as the actual inherence, like, oh my goodness, like I'm a terrible person. What kind of human being am I that I could do this? I never really hear that in those categories, but yeah, sexual, religious, spiritual obsessions, definitely. And so, I will assess that as far as its severity up front. In a few instances, it's actually become a momentary detour where the person literally just couldn't continue with exposures or other things. In most cases, it's cool because trauma work there's three first-line treatments for trauma, and one of them is exposure. And so they're doing like exposure scripting. Actually, it's not just like, well, I guess we'll try to use it in OCD. No, it's like evidence-based, even if you did have PTSD. And so the scripting itself, also the review and a little bit of the inhibitory learning model, incorporating a person's learning about exposure, gets a little bit of almost processing. I'm not saying talk therapy, y'all, but it gets a little bit of processing that out. And those are a couple of really key things that we need with heavy emotions anyway. So for most, it kind of works itself out For those that it's hanging around more, I treat it like any other detour, like alcohol use disorder or panic attacks. You have some panic attacks a little bit with OCD. It's not uncommon. Probably at least a quarter of the time that a person's going to have at least a panic attack. Well, period, out of all people. And OCD, I don't know how frequent it is. Panic disorder, what is a few percentage points of the population, and it's higher in OCD. So all those things may mean that we take a pause. Maybe it's just a session, a half a session, and we talk about it. Mm-hmm. And there can be some of the cognitive restructuring, right? Addressing some of those cognitive distortions. Sometimes it's this really thick, compounded shame from all the things that the person's lost. And maybe just in that moment, they feel particular shame about having a thought, but they're also feeling a lot of emotions about the fact that they haven't married or had kids or haven't started a job, or they're still stuck in the house because of their OCD. And in that moment, they may not be able to verbalize that. And so in my experience, that's where in necessary cases, I mean, first default, of course, is let's get rid of the big thing that's creating the problems, but we'll stop. We'll do a little bit of work with that. And I'll admit to you, like, I'm not the expert for sure in that realm of shame, for example. Yeah. And sometimes it's just pulling out a book by Brené Brown or something.
But I guess you specifically as a Christian and a, can I say Christian therapist? Is that a label that fits? Or
yeah, definitely. And I work with people of all backgrounds and respect. But yes,
you can. I guess what I mean though is that I'm sure you'd still bring in some biblical stuff at this point of God is not thinking any less of you for having these thoughts. That type of pep talk. Is that kind of fair to say?
Yeah. So yeah, for Christian clients. Yep. Yeah. Once I've done that assessment. And that's fair. But yeah. So that's part of that validation, right? And part of the affirmation, acceptance, and cognitive restructuring. And that's where, when done sensitively, it can go a long way and make a huge difference. And what I've found is that, I mean, OCD is one of the most isolating things, period. Most isolating disorders. And so clients who have every intention and every wish to be very much involved more faith-wise, they haven't been able to even be poured into in the normal ways by like a faith community, because one, maybe they've really been at home and impaired, and maybe because of their obsessions, they can't go to a church group or fill in the blank. And so though I'm not a pastor, it can really, really come in cool ways where it's like, well, hey, what do you think about having that thought? Do you think that God is upset with you, angry, condemning you? Well, no, like there's no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. Okay. So what do you think God's view is? Right. Doing a little bit of just asking questions, digging into it. And sometimes it's really direct and straightforward, and the obsessions, you know, just hit hard. They're just those noise intrusions. But then sometimes the person really needs to do some a little bit more work with what they're thinking, what they're feeling with that. And then the caveat that I'll say with that too, we can also get too distracted in the emotions, the shame, the guilt, the sadness, etc. And feel them. We don't want to suppress it, just like anything else. But over time, too, I think the more experienced I become as a clinician, these things become more of a feel thing. And then I can ask some good questions when I start to feel it to make sure that I'm not just doing it on a gut reaction, but can find a lot of times, oh, this person is feeling the urge, like they need to process. And so all the little things, right, that we look out for. That's the other side of the street.
I like that. Okay, I'll answer that question. I guess one question is, we've kind of talked a lot, at least initially, about the individual being hesitant to get treatment, get therapy, even if it's from a Christian therapist, they may be hesitant, or a therapist with Christian values, I should say. So how, but in the case of the family, so let's say maybe they're more open-minded, but their family are more conservative and traditional in their faith and kind of maybe look down or are skeptical of therapy, even if it's from a Christian, or they're skeptical of medication. How does this person talk to their very conservative family to kind of get their buy-in?
Yeah, I've seen this go great and I've seen it go poorly. More often than not, actually, I've seen it go great or at least decently enough. So I think I may have said in the first talk that I gave that about 90% of clients, I'll say, at some point, no matter what your age, whether you're a 12-year-old or an 80-year-old, I would like you to consider, it's up to you, consent process, your call, but I would like you to consider bringing in significant other, spouse. I've invited people to bring in their church Bible study members because, you know, as a single person who just moved to Dallas, you know, maybe that's all they've got at this point. And so it's like, this is my main community. Great. Could we do a Zoom call? Let's do a call just with all of them. And so with family, no doubts, obviously you have a number of talks. The topic of family as its own talk in and of itself. Yeah. But on the quick side of things, if there's that resistance, first of all, I don't take that as necessarily a surprise, just like for the OCD sufferer. And I think I need to treat it in similar ways. And it really depends on how important it is to involve that person. And I think that for a lot of folks, just some very basic information and education can go a long ways. So I print out some handouts and have some flyers, and I try to put a ton of content on my website and do free guides and one that is for family members, to family members of sufferers. It's this glossy PDF guide that people can look at and get validated to, like, hey, if you've had some stress in this, know that not only are you not alone, that's normal. And this is a really hard road for everybody. Here's what the evidence base says. Here are common experiences, fill in the blank. And I don't know. I'm not sure if this is the case. I tend to think that a lot of people are very responsive to something like that. To begin, and or the thing that is the relationship currency that oftentimes hits home for a lot of families is the fact that it's their family member who's suffering. And so when that family member gets into treatment, you're learning these things and making changes and hopefully seeing some of those differences. When family can actually, kind of like an exposure has to be this experience before that person can, a new experience so that they can have new learning, family oftentimes have to go through some new learning too, because maybe they've been through ups and downs with that person. So yeah, just education, but inviting that person in if they play a prominent role or if it's very important in talking about it. And I'll get any number of questions, any number of concerns in as we're talking on the topic of Christians with OCD. Definitely, I mean, the concerns really sound the same for family members. Well, what's like, aren't I supposed to think about whatever is lovely, whatever is pure, whatever is true, whatever is just? Think about such things in Philippians. Well, interesting that you should ask. So if we think about this rationally, if we're always supposed to be happy-go-lucky, positive, then wouldn't that mean that we couldn't confess sin? Okay. If I steal money from Stuart, because it's just right there on the table virtually, steal some Bitcoin from you or something like that. Like, don't I have to see that to acknowledge it, that that's a problem? Yes. So we look at the larger context of those things. And sometimes family members need some supportive psychoeducation in the process of, oh, okay, so to do an imaginal exposure script for a blasphemous thought, oh, okay, so that's not the reason that you're saying that I may script this out is that I'm learning to change my reactions. And I might actually start to use some of the similar language of other things of I'm learning to walk by faith. And to tolerate that uncertainty and those awful feelings that maybe it feels like I've rejected God, but you know what? I'm having these thoughts and I'm going to walk by faith by doing this exposure. And so most family members will get it with a little bit of maybe the handouts, the client talking to them or coming into a session, but some won't. And many clients can still just continue on their path, but in some unfortunate and rare cases I've seen where the parents, actually for adult clients, but this would be true for teens and young ones as well, the parents not being on board sometimes delays their getting help or completely blocks it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, thank you for sharing. So my next question is very different, which is, you know, you meet God in heaven, or before heaven, you randomly stumble upon him, her, whatever, at some random location, some bar in Dallas. For some reason, they're there having a glass of wine. Maybe they've got some cake. What do you want them to say to you? What would you like them to say to you?
And this is the... So the person who's talking is the OCD
sufferer? No, sorry. So I worded that wrong. I was trying to be gender neutral and avoid saying him for God. But let's say Jesus. You meet Jesus. What do you want Jesus to say to you?
Oh, man. Well done, faithful servants.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
I like it.
Simple as that.
Yeah. Excellent. And then lastly, is there anything else you wish you could have said today?
Well, I think I've said a lot. As I warned y'all, I'm wordy. Two things, resources. I think you'll put some resources down there, and if these are suitable with you. The IOCDF, they have their page live, but it's being built. So it's iocdf.org/OCD in faith. Great resource. ACcounseling.org is Ted Witzig. So if you want to, my friend who's the and colleague, the pastor and psychologist. And my website, justincahughes.com, keep a lot of stuff up there. Want people to know. I said in the first talk that there's hope. And I just want to continue to convey that, and want people, of course, to know that there's hope with the OCD treatments, period. I'll work with anyone, everyone, and hey, it's okay if you're not Christian, whatever your background is, I'm here to help you in the areas that are important to you. But for Christians, just be clear, sometimes believing and trusting and obeying Jesus as that is my first priority is for me personally. And so for clients, sometimes that means, of course, doing the normal things that faith requires, but sometimes it's doing exposure and response prevention. Sometimes it's taking the medication. Sometimes maybe it's going to a conference, right? Or checking out OCD Game Changers, or fill in the blank, or listening to OCD Stories. What? One of my professors, the late Howard Hendricks, in seminary, famous Bible study methods theology professor, had said that sometimes the most spiritual thing you can do is to get some sleep. And so I want to encourage, exhort, challenge listeners that sometimes the step of faith is leaning into the exposure. Sometimes the step of faith is taking the SSRI. Sometimes the step of faith, of course, is prayer. Sometimes the step of faith is scripture reading. Sometimes it's helping our neighbor out of their terrible situation. And maybe today it's just listening to this. I don't know. And I hope it's useful. And I'm still learning. I'm still tolerating my own uncertainty about these things and leaning into my own imperfections. But will you join me for the journey? I'm in. I'm buckled in. Yeah. So that's a listener. And Stuart, you are just always just so much fun to be around. I'm just honored to be here.
No, I appreciate it. And hopefully my interpretations of the Bible and Jesus haven't annoyed too many people, but they come from a good place and I enjoy talking about it. So
yeah,
always good to speak to you, Justin.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoy the OCD Stories podcast and would like to support us with a one-time tip/donation, please go to theocdstories.com/support. All tips, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to the podcast. And thank you to NoCD for supporting our work. And if you want to find out more about NoCD, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.